Welcome to the second episode of EverStage's Go-To Masters podcast, Season 2. We interview the GTM leaders of today's most dynamic companies and tap into their unique insights and hard-earned lessons. I'm your host, Venkat, Head of RevOps at EverStage. Today, we have Jordan with us. Hey, Jordan, can you give our listeners a quick introduction about what you do and who you are?
Yeah, happy to. And thanks for having me on the program. My name is Jordan. I am the head of revenue operations and strategy at Candid, which is a B2B clear aligner product. So think, you know, orthodontics, clear braces. And I am currently running a team of about five people. And we head up a number of the kind of top revenue initiatives at the company.
Awesome. What interested me the most about you was the typical journey that I've seen in RevOps is a lot of shuffling and shifting, crossovers, moving in from a different org to RevOps, sales to RevOps, customer success to RevOps, marketing to RevOps. I was really excited when I saw that you started as an ops analyst and then, you know, you charted your own way to the top. Can you tell us about your journey from an ops analyst to heading RevOps at your company?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a bit of a winding journey. I started out at Candid when we were a direct-to-consumer business and began my time as a customer senior associate of customer operations, something like that. And we were a relatively small team. It was, you know, less than 20 of us working in a small apartment here in New York City. So we got a lot of time together and I got a lot of different experience doing pretty much anything that needed to get done. I was, lowest on the totem pole. So I got to experience a lot of different things, which was actually really fun. And from there, I really just took a builder mentality. I wanted to tackle the toughest problems that we had and just would go all in on various pursuits. Early on, we had our first patients going into treatment and figured out, hey, what do we do when they're in treatment and need support? So I helped build that out. I moved to Columbus, Ohio for a year, built out our headquarters there, which at its peak had a couple of hundred people working. After that, I spent some time back in true strategy ops and legal ops, building out almost 50 professional corporations in the United States so that we could offer in-network insurance to our consumers. And then after that, worked with one of our co-founders to start up a B2B product, which eventually became our entire company. So I just continued to, you know, grow in that role, take things on, and over time, I've, you know, learned a thing or two potentially, and now try to help lead a team to be as successful as possible and drive as much incremental revenue as we can here.
Yeah, I agree with whatever you said, right? Because as a core ops professional, I've moved industries, but at the core of it, I've always been operations. And to stick to operations for 10 years, 6 years, 7 years takes a lot of patience and perseverance, which are two qualities which are probably not talked about. You always talk about numbers, figures and stuff, but you know, you need to be at it every day, do the same things repetitively and make sure, you know, you're not called out a lot. It's all under the radar and all that. But you touched upon a lot of points there, right? So when you came back to, sit down and, you know, you decided you're going to lead this team, did you want to configure the RevOps role and the RevOps team itself? Like, did you want to take up a bunch of, in terms of the size, that's one thing, in terms of what you want to take as a part of RevOps versus what you want to leave out as a part of RevOps? How did you configure this and what is your typical team size that you're working with today?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my top time in, you know, customer operations, I think I had a team of about 30 people. That was obviously the extreme. I've now moved to having much smaller, more intimate teams where I get to work a lot more one-on-one with some of the top minds in both revenue strategy, operations, and just strategic consulting as well. So when I started off in what eventually became known as revenue operations at the time was just stuff that needed to get done. I had a handful of people working for me. It was about three or four. It varied over the years, but essentially we handled everything from true sales operations to, you know, day-to-day commissions, putting together reports, supporting the field team, getting feedback. We had a marketing operations person on our team as well. We really helped with the liaising between our marketing department, our team, and our actual doctors who work with us. And then there was also the enablement side where we, you know, worked on training, et cetera. And then the last piece of it was true revenue operations, which was focused on incremental growth initiatives, figuring out how to add value and make sure that we kind of did a up and to the right curve on top of whatever our company's budget goals were. Over time, we have brought in some different personnel. who have started to take on some of those roles. So marketing has really absorbed a lot of marketing operations, which has been helpful. Sales operations is now starting to fall a bit more under the true sales leadership. And now I've got a small team that is heading a ton of different projects here that allow us to focus on both the strategy, how we're doing it, how do we actually operationalize it, how do we make it successful, and then how do we make the next project successful. So we get to do a lot of building, and that's something that has kept my career growing and the team that I work with. So again, pretty small team right now. That's the way we wanted it, so that we can have really, really high performing individuals, the best in the industry, come in and help us really drive results in a different way than we have historically. So I've had both the operational side where it's true day-to-day business as usual, and then also now moving more into the different ways to grow our revenue, how to support our executives in their various initiatives, partner with, you know, other verticals in the company. And it's been very exciting. I think we get to do a lot of cool stuff. We're never bored. And, you know, we get to come to work excited every day.
Awesome. So when you said it gets absorbed into a new org, does it still have a matrix organization where some of it dotted line rolls up to you and you get a seat in the table?
Yeah, 100%. I wouldn't say necessarily it rolls up into me, because I want to be respectful of the other partner teams who really have great structures themselves. But there are so many dotted lines with my team where we are interacting with personnel in marketing, in product, in engineering, in market research, sales enablement, the sales team itself, legal, really every department touches us. And so my team, probably most in the organization, is incredibly cross-functional. There's nobody we don't work with in a variety of different ways. And so for that reason, it's, if you were to structure it out, it looks very much like a spider's web. We're going to be touching a lot of different things, but that's the way we like it. And that's the way we're able to bring people together, drive projects on time, successful, all of that different stuff.
Awesome. One small nuance there. Have you also been conscious to let go of certain things when you define the scope of RevOps? Because at the early stage, you basically have to do everything that's not done by others. Like, I'm probably taking up things that others are not doing right now, and it's needed for the company as the business operations leader. But then over a period of time, have you been really conscious to keep step away from certain things that you don't want to do?
I really struggle with letting things go. I feel like everything is my baby. I started out when we were working this B2B product that eventually we converted our entire company to. It was myself and a co-founder. The two of us did everything, everything from putting together emails to talking to doctors, to working with customers, going out and selling in the field. We really did every piece of it. And so during that time, I learned a lot and wouldn't trade it for the world, but was doing everything on the spectrum. As we started to build out the business as usual day-to-day operations side, what I was able to do is bring on some people who I really trusted to help take off pieces of it, so that we could put together an aggregate view of how we want to push the organization forward. So again, I was kind of able to offload some of the things like commission or enablement or training, able to get together with our marketing operations person at the time and have them start to take on communication of marketing projects, feedback from the reps. And I took on different roles as well. And so obviously a variety of subsets. I think as we moved from that into kind of strategy and the role of incremental revenue, it's been hard for me to release some things. But at the same time, I know that it's important for other people's development to give them things. I also know that in order to be the best at my job and to support my team to the best of my ability and to make them hit the maximum potential that they have in this business, I've got to be dedicated there. And so I try to give off things that I can maintain a, you know, hand in things that are really important for our oversight and our opinion on. And it, you know, it evolves over time. So generally I struggle letting things go, because I also just love to say yes, I love to help. But at the end of the day, I'm, you know, improving that over the years. And I think that's something that as you rise up through more managerial roles, you're just forced to do, because there isn't enough time in the day to support people, to make sure they're making good decisions, help them make those analytical decisions, and then also get, you know, your own initiatives and project work done.
I think you've done what many of us struggle to do, which is basically transitioning from an everyday ops person to actually being a strategic leader, like an internal consultant to the leadership, or even you are obviously part of the leadership, but even like being a team of internal consultants is a difficult thing to pull off when you have been doing. And there is also fear of letting things go, like you just said, right? Hey, what if something breaks? You should just trust the other person. And so how have you been able to I mean, probably it's the same points that you mentioned, but I'm just curious to know if there is even more nuance to letting go of operations versus strategic consulting kind of a mindset, or is it something that grows over time and you become that over time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we probably are in the latter, where it has been an evolution over time. We have had many titles, many ideas of what we do internally and externally. We've grown and really started to make sure that the best person to own different things is owning it, so that there is an expert. I think what we have gotten to a point of is, our CEO likes to say there are kind of barbell players. You know, some people are experts in one thing at the very end, right, of the barbell, and they are really good at being an engineer. They're really good at doing sales training. They're really good at translating marketing information and working on some of our clinical education, et cetera. There are people who are really good at, you know, managing a sales team, people who are really good at supporting them with analytics and reporting and working in our CRM. And then my team over time has become more generalist oriented, where we have to be pretty good at a lot of things, but we're not the ultimate expert. But because of that, in many ways, we become the expert consultant, or the, I mean that less in the term of being a consultant and more just being consulted, because we have a forest level view that most people don't. So our team, by doing a lot of the in the weeds work at first, and then handing projects off once it's very, once it's built out, operating, moving smoothly, they kind of hand it off, allows them both to have the in the weeds work. So they know what it's like to do firsthand anything we ask someone else to do. We would never have someone else do something we haven't tried ourselves. For example, when we launched our sales development rep role, the four of us spent a week in a car going around, knocking on doctors' offices there, and you know, trying to pitch them on her product. So, you know, truly, I mean, we're immersive, and I always make my team be very immersive in their work. And that then allows them to be really good strategists, because they understand the plight of the people on the front line, the needs of the people on the front line, but then also the market, the, you know, flows, the operational asks, all that kind of stuff as well.
Correct. Basically, have a nuance and not just talk about Excel sheets and decision based on that. Awesome. Obviously, you know, you have mentioned a lot of them, but are there one or two initiatives that you are really proud of over the last 6-7 years at Candid that, you know, created the most impact at Candid?
Yeah, I mean, I think personally, my three top items. One is going to be opening up our headquarters in Columbus, Ohio, which at the time was the heart and soul of a lot of our operational pieces, being part of our lab, our, you know, a part of processing part of our product, our sales team, our insurance team, a lot of our, almost our entire operational team. So we had a lot there. We built it up, a few hundred people working in that location over time. Obviously, as we transitioned to a B2B world, that part of the organization, also as the pandemic hit, right, changed a bit. But at its peak, that was, you know, a very much important organ in the body of our company. The second piece that I'm really proud of is, in our direct consumer business, I worked really, really closely with our legal team at the time, and helped create the, you know, almost 50 professional corporations, which in the world of dental insurance, you need a doctor-owned corporation in order to bill insurance, which makes sense. So we had to find a way that in every state we operated in, we had a doctor-led corporation that we could bill insurance with. And, you know, it's about as exciting as it sounds, which is not that exciting, but it was something we needed to do. We got our hands dirty, we figured it out, and that saved Candid, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and helped put hundreds of thousands of dollars back into patients' pockets, which is the most important piece. And then I think the third thing being working with our co-founder to create what is our B2B product, which is our entire company today. We started out really with an idea, with an inkling that there might be a desire for this out there. And then we built it, a few of us at first. And then when the pandemic hit, it felt like a really good time to transition to a B2B product instead. And so we made that full change as an organization. And so in that way, our business right now is something that I at least had a hand in starting. And that's just really something I'm very proud of, and am honored to get that experience. So, you know, that's something that I think has been the pinnacle so far, but really feel honored to have gotten to work with our co-founder, given that opportunity, and, you know, kind of helped grow what has become, you know, our collective baby at this point.
Awesome. I actually listened in on the podcast that you have on your website, where you talk about the D2C to B2B shift. I recommend listening to that. That's a really nice analysis of the pivot that you guys made. In terms of, I'm obviously going down, drilling down into the team itself, right? Because you have had a big experience in growing itself. I am curious to know, how do you hire people, right? Specifically, what do you set them as goals on 30, 60, and 90 days after joining? All those things, because you have done the hard work, you have done the dirty work. Now, when you hire, how do you curate them for success?
Yeah, for sure. In some ways, I'm a hard ass when it comes to train or hiring, because I really want to make sure that someone can succeed in this role. Because as we talked about earlier, right, it's a mixture of hands-on willingness and strategic thinking. So you have to be just right for this role. And for that reason, I have a smaller team. I really take the time to hire the right people. The hiring process for me, at least, includes, you know, a screener. Let's make sure that people are generally okay to chat. Then they'll spend an hour with me. We're going to talk about everything in their resume. We're going to talk about the way they think about things, their philosophy of approaching projects, and also get a sense, is this person willing to roll up their sleeves and get dirty and really get into the you know, front line of whatever the problems are they are solving? There's a lot of people who are really good thinkers, but don't really want to do that. And there's people who are really good at doing the latter, but aren't great at the strategic side. So you have to find the right balance. And from there, then we have them do a basically a small project, take some data, give us a presentation on it. And the, you know, solution there is actually not what findings they make, it's how they present it to us. Are they able to take data and turn it into a narrative? Very few people can do that. And so that's actually what I'm looking for. Can someone take what is very nuanced charts, numbers, and, you know, back-end data, and turn that into a visualization and a story that makes sense? Because when our team is presenting out, we have to make sense to both the CEO and the board. And then on the full opposite end of the spectrum, we have to make sense to the frontline reps too. And if so, if our narrative doesn't meet with all of those needs, it's not going to be successful. So those are the things I really look for in hiring. When I bring someone on, first 30 days, I want them to listen, ask, and dive deep. I want them to go in with positive intent. So many people go into new jobs and they start judging, why are we doing this way? Why are we doing that? That's not helpful. Come in, understand why we're doing it that way, even if it's the wrong reasons. Listen to others, sit in meetings, really absorb. And I think a lot of people want to make a difference right away. And I love that. I love that energy and I love that passion, but I want you to kind of be a listener. I know there are some CEOs out there who start at new businesses and literally sit for 30 or 90 days and don't talk in meetings. Literally, that's a rule that they follow. And I actually really admire that. 30 to 60 days, then, you know, I really want you to start taking on some projects. Usually I'll give you one that's pretty easy. I just want you to get your hands wet, do something well, be able to check off a checkbox that you've done your first project. You feel some, you know, sense of accomplishment and you can kind of get the wheels running. The other thing I like to do is give you a really sticky one, one that's either politically sticky within the company or the narrative is really hard or, you know, whatever it might be. Cause I want to see how you do. I want you to struggle. I want to help you through that experience so that you both have the experience of a little bit of struggle, right? If you're not struggling, you're not learning. And then also to kind of have that early success, because otherwise it's demotivating. And then from 60 to 90 days on, or really 60 days on, I need you to drive results and earn your keep, really, right? I need you to, and obviously I'm there. I have a very robust learning and development product or a process I do with my team. I really try to manage all of those pieces effectively. But, you know, obviously I'm growing as a manager constantly, so it's not perfect. But I really want my team to increase. And almost everybody who has worked for me over the course of my career has gone on either for an internal or external promotion after working on my team. So that's something I'm very passionate about. And for that reason, I try to pick the right people. I try to have a very clear expectation of them as they start and set them up for success in a way that enables them to run with it here at the company. I don't want to micromanage. I want them to be able to, you know, be their own mini CEOs and really own projects and use me as a, just a, as a thought partner or someone to bounce ideas off of and to kind of help when you get stuck. And so that's my general approach to all of this, both hiring, onboarding, and kind of, you know, early work at the company.
I really resonate with the fact that you called out the listening part of it. It's a very, very underrated skill, I feel. People who listen are much more powerful than people who talk a lot. Just one thing that I wanted to take one point from what you said. When you hire someone, right, you said you have a bunch of projects. You have in your mind a few projects that you want to give in the 30, 60, 90 days. When you hire, do you also prefer a data analyst or a data scientist over a program manager or someone who's like a really good generalist? and probably understands data versus someone who's a really awesome data scientist but can be coached to understand a business later? So how do you, in terms of preferences, what do you like in your team?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that's the ever-present balance, right? When hiring, I want to find someone as close to a generalist as possible who is both proficient enough in the data. We have a data team, right? You ChatGPT now, you can use for a lot of things, right? I just need you to understand how data works and be able to go learn and fix something if you need to, or learn to interpret what the you know, patterns are within some set of information. And then I also need you to be able to explain that narrative. And that part is really important. I think generalists are a dying breed. People either go into individual contributors where all they do is their one thing and they do it really well, or they go into managerial paths where they're people managing all the time. These people are kind of that unique middle ground where they have project experience or project management work that they will do. I don't need them to come in with that necessarily. I just need them to come in hungry, ready to learn, willing to be wrong, and have at least a semi-proficient data work and proven record of that passion, of that willingness to get your hands dirty, to do the work. It's going to be a very exotic role in that way compared to what a lot of people are looking for right now. And so for that reason, we have a lot of people who come in, we talk to them about the role, and they're like, hey, this might be more intense than I'm looking for, or this might not be the type of career path I'm looking for. And that's totally great. I'd love to know that up front. I don't want you to start 30 days in, tell me that. So we try to be very, very upfront, very forthcoming about what the role is like. And the people who are the right fit love it. Like, it is what drives them every day. They couldn't think of a better spot to be. And then those that are, you know, more looking for something else, you know, go their way. And we obviously wish them the best. So it's, you know, it just depends, I think, on the person. But for me, generalists are something that is near and dear to my heart because that has been my specialty throughout my career. And so I like to look for people who can really embrace that. And doesn't mean they won't become experts on certain things over time. But, you know, even if it's 60-40, 35, 65, whatever the balance is, it's not going to be 50-50 all the time. I would love it to be, but you know, that's kind of where I find value in people.
Awesome. The time just flew by. I didn't even see it. Thank you so much for your time. Closing questions. Where can people find you? Do you have a social profile? Do you have a LinkedIn profile that you respond to?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to my LinkedIn profile. Just search my name. It'll come up. If you go to jordan-shaheen.com, it'll take you to my LinkedIn profile. Feel free to connect with me. I always will accept invitations or friend requests, and then message me. I love chatting with new people. I'm happy to hop on a call, happy to go back and forth async, whatever would be interesting to you. I love meeting new people and love offering any help that I can have and learning myself. So feel free to reach out. I'm always here to listen and chat.
Awesome. So as I started out, I said, this is probably the show to be if you're a newbie who's starting out on RevOps. Any final words of wisdom on people who are actually starting out and feeling the daily grind?
Yeah, I think be diligent, be hungry, and be authentic. Diligent is in do a really good job, be detail oriented, be thorough. Hungry, be willing to take on new things, be willing to accept feedback and willing to learn, and then be authentic, be yourself. There's going to be a grind to this job. You have to bring your own, you know, genuine self to it because you're going to go crazy otherwise, and become a part of that team. It's, you know, the work is not family. I think that's a common misconception. It doesn't have to be perfect all the time, but work is a team. Think of yourself as a critical part of that team. Be yourself, find how you can both bring culture and efficacy to the org, and you'll do well.
Awesome. I also think in terms of efficiency improvements every minute you work. So it keeps you on your toes when you look at maybe difficult things to do. Can you use ChatGPT to do what you're doing today and maybe look at something else? But yeah, awesome. I'm actually building a small team here and everything resonates. I'll maybe have them listen to this. Thank you for your time, Jordan. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome. I appreciate the time.
And that brings us to the end of this insightful episode of GoToMasters. Big thanks to Jordan for sharing his experiences with us. Remember, you can tune into this every week to learn more from game changers driving hypergrowth companies across the globe. GoToMasters is brought to you by EverStage, your trusted partner for transforming the way businesses handle sales compensation. I'm your host, Venkat, signing off.